When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I, Charles the Fourth, or is it the Third? Bloody
pen. We will strive for the detoxification of the
Let me put it to you.
Can't grow, can't grow.
Yes, you
if
can.
You win by one, you've won.
The phone went over the side.
It is time to draw in the
I just think everyone should be sure.
What the fuck is going on?
Hello, I'm Mark Steele. Welcome to my podcast where each week I ask the question, what the fuck is going on?
What the fuck is going on?
This Rwanda thing could work out the best for everybody. For years there were all these articles that started, I can reveal that asylum seekers are put up in luxury accommodation with features such as windows with uninterrupted views that go as far as the moon, a bathroom that could contain over 200 onions, light facilitating technology that can illuminate the entire room in less than a second, access to state-of-the-art sleeping facilities, enabling the pampered asylum seeker to be either asleep or awake according to their wish, a stall on which asylum seekers may imagine a stable with 20 horses paid for by the taxpayer. And then you get people going, I'm telling you, what? They get straight off the boat, they're given a Michelin star chef, what? A choice of jet skis and their own personal snooker referee. Now, the government was sick of paying to keep people in DSS bed and breakfast, so they decided to save money by sending them to Rwanda, which is always cheaper. We all do the same. We say, oh, it's end of the month. I can't really afford to go out this week, you know. What I'll do to save money is I'll fly to Rwanda in a specially chartered plane with a couple of personal security guards. The government's own figures estimate that their scheme will cost £63,000 per person extra, above the cost of someone who isn't sent to Rwanda. So all these people who complain about the cost of keeping asylum seekers here must be furious. How much are we paying to not have them here? They ought to be sent back to Britain, a lot of them. Now, the courts ruled that Rwanda wasn't a safe country, so it was illegal to send people there. So then the government passed a law to say that it is safe. See how simple it is to make things safe? They should do the same with other things that don't seem safe, like fire and drunk driving and lions, and not take any notice of the woke brigade and their concerns about getting pissed and crashing a car full of lit fireworks into the lion enclosure at Bristol Zoo. And then they could reassure the people bothered about the cost by passing a law that says that paying £63,000 extra makes things cheaper. And if anyone objects, well, we've left the European Court of Mathematics, so we don't have to take any notice of their rules anymore. Now, the Rwandan government has been worried over the years about its own image. They want to show that they're a modern, nice Rwanda. And so what they should do when this first plane arrives in a few months is they should give every asylum seeker a Michelin star chef, a choice of jet skis and their own personal snooker referee. And Rwanda will lose its reputation for being a bit unpleasant. The British government will be able to say, we told you they'd be fine over there. The asylum seekers will love it. Everybody wins.
When everybody honest, wise, or decent had all gone, there was nothing left to ask, but what the fuck is going on?
This week, the government passed its Rwanda bill, but not everyone was happy with the outcome, especially this woman, who I heard on a phone-in show.
Oh, I'm sick of it, Jeremy, sick of it. 2 years it's taken, and still they haven't flown anyone to Rwanda. They could have swum there by now. And why is it costing so much? Someone said it's going to work out at 2 million quid each. Why do they have to fly them first class? They should have sent them on EasyJet so they land in Rwanda Liverpool Airport and then they'd have to walk there. I'd like to see these people who come over here in a dinghy make some effort to get somewhere for a change. Oh, I saw hundreds of them the other morning coming off a boat. I rang the Coast Guard. They said, that's the Woolwich Ferry. I said, any excuse. They're bringing their cars and all. I suppose we're expected to look after them too. I haven't got time to change the oil in an engine. And what about all these human traffickers? No wonder it took me an hour and a half to get to Costco the other day. It's bad enough with the roadworks without them in their human traffic jams, going everywhere in their dinghies. And yet I'm the one who gets fined just for parking my car in the children's ward at the hospital. I saw a programme about Rwanda. It looked lovely. Everyone there was so tall. My neighbour said they're giraffes. I said, I suppose they're coming over here next, are they? Am I going to fit one of them in my bathroom? Oh, I'm sick of it, Jeremy. Sick of it. What the fuck? What the
fuck? What the fuck is going on? Now, you know, if you've even heard this podcast once, even half a time, you know that the most important thing is to pay heed to the very, very careful warning that you can't find out what the fuck is going on without expert advice. And we have with us now someone who's already offered her expertise on this show once. Rachel Fairburn, how are you?
Hello, I'm very well. How are you?
Well, I'm all right. As I've said to people many months during this period, I'm all right apart from the cancer.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing. Where are you at the moment?
I'm in Barry Island in Wales. I'm gigging here. Or was gigging here last night.
There is a big sort of, it's a big holiday place, isn't it?
Well, there used to be, so it's not there anymore. So this is my parents met at Barry Island. On they worked at the Butlins that was here, which was a huge place. Because my dad's Welsh, my mum's English. They were working the kitchens at Barry Island. That's where they met.
Oh,
and it was a huge, huge complex. It's gone now. I think they built houses on it, but it was like a massive employer here and. You know, I think in the days before everyone went abroad to work, you know, I'm going to Ibiza for the summer. It was like, I'm going to Barry Island to work at the Butlins. It's not really, there's a beautiful beach and some great charity shops. But it's just quite sad because you just think it must be so thriving, you know, in the summer with, you know, people coming on holiday here and everything and coming to work. And it's just now it's just I was walking down from the train station. I was like, it's just all, there's a vape shop. You know, there's a pound shop. It's a bit sad, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I bet everywhere's like that now. I bet Beverly Hills is like that now.
Rodeo
used
Drive.
To be brilliant here a few years ago. Sylvester Stallone lived there and Bruce Willis lived over there. And now, you know his old house? That's a nail bar.
Yeah, look, I was just walking through and I just think it's really sad because I don't know, you just think, he's everywhere just shit now. He's everywhere just shit.
I don't think, I mean, because, you know, my old sort of, the last however long it's been of my many years of my life has been about sort of trying to find differences in places. So in some ways, when I get to a place and it's exactly like that, That's I find that as interesting as anything because I think, now I've got to find what's different here because there doesn't look like there's anything. It looks like there's just exactly them things you say. And then eventually you will find it pretty much everywhere. I remember going to Portishead and thinking, God, this high street looks really, really like there's nothing just outside Bristol. And then there was this one shop that was a stationer's and it had been there about 100 years and it was still run by the same family. And there was about 8 rooms in this stationer's. There was one where you had to bend down really low. You know, I'm not particularly tall, but I had to stoop about a foot to get through the door and in this one room. And it was just piled up with jigsaw puzzles. And it was really, really strange, run by this sort of really, really sort of peculiar old people that seemed very sweet. And the bloke running it went, yeah, everything comes through here. I think I had the tickets. You had to get the tickets for the
in town recording there. And then while I was there, this woman came up to the old fella who ran this little dusty old shop that was like something you would imagine if they were to do a sort of stylish type of Willy Wonka type film set in England. This sort of shop, it looked like that. Everywhere was slightly crooked and peculiar, but very sweet, but disconcerting. And this woman came up and said to the bloke, "Have the tickets for the Lion King come in?" And he went, "They're coming in tomorrow." And she said, "I just want to check. It's not the porn version, is it?" Yeah. And I thought, right, I found my place. And I sort of, and the high street is just exactly as you describe it. Just think it could be anywhere. But there was this one place where all the, like, everywhere must have this one, at least one place where all the madness happened.
Do you know, I think that's interesting because I've seen so many stationery shops as well that are like the oldest shop on a high street. Walthamstow, where I live, there was one that's just there and it's like very old. It's still got like net curtains in the window. Nobody goes in. I've never seen anyone going in. It's so old fashioned. And there's that one. And there's another.
I wonder what that's a front for then.
Well, it's just these stationery shops. I'm convinced there's something about, you know, these stationery shops that just stay up. But then again, people do need pens and paper. So I don't know. Or maybe we're just dreaming them all. That could be the other.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's a front. I think the Chinese own that place. That's where COVID was invented. And a little basement there. Quick, 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 they're coming. Get the rulers out. Pretend we're selling them.
You might be onto something there.
Yeah, no, it's like it's, God, yeah, because I did Walthamstow a couple of years ago and I don't remember seeing the stationery shop.
Yeah, it's not on the high street. It's like just round.
All right.
Near a pub called The Bell.
That's not the Diana one, is it? There's one where they're obsessed with Diana.
No, no, it's not the Diana Cafe. There used to be the Jeremy Corbyn Cafe in Finsbury Park. Did you ever see that?
No.
As you came out of Finsbury Park Station, there was just a little cafe, like a little Turkish cafe. But it had, I think you could probably Google it, it was just covered in pictures of Jeremy Corbyn. He used to go in there as well. And they were so obsessed that, you know those like Turkish teapots, like the... And they have the long spout.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they stuck a picture of his head on the end of one of the spouts. Like, that's how much they loved him. He was everywhere. Like, it was like a shrine to Jeremy Corbyn. They loved him.
I wonder if he went in there.
Yeah,
he wouldn't, would you? If there was a Rachel Fairbairn cafe, and you'd think, I'm not going to pour my tea out of a spout with my head on the end.
No, I'd be so embarrassed. You'd be like, oh, thanks, but that's a bit weird, wouldn't you? You'd think, you know, but I mean.
It's coming though, because, you know, your podcast's very popular. This will happen. Somewhere in the world, you don't even know the podcast, could be anywhere. It could be somewhere in the hills of Tibet.
Could be. Someone could be a huge fan of me just, and you know, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, like these islands where they worship Prince Philip, weren't they?
You see, now that'd be quite nice.
To get somewhere and find that you're just the god, and they go, come, I told you she was coming back.
What a lovely surprise. That'd be great, that. Although it would be quite irritating, I think, after a while. I think initially you'd go, oh, this is a turn up for the books.
Yeah.
And then after about an hour of being, you know, revered and celebrated, you'd get quite embarrassed and think, all right, just turn it in now.
I know, yeah, you would. Can I just have an egg sandwich? And then they'd all be sort of like taking crumbs of it and putting it behind a glass case. And just give it here, mate.
Yeah, just, you know, leave it. Just leave it.
He said to give it here, mate. We must heed his words. Christ. Now, this is...
Yes.
Do you think that the old images of the difference between the North and the South, I mean, I'm not sure they did used to mean something. The North was poorer than the South. The North was friendlier than the South. Does that, you know, there was always problems with that because the North is not one place and nor is the South. But do you think that that's gone completely now, that there's that none of those things exist or apply, shall I say?
Well, it's weird because I don't... I suppose it depends where you're from in the north, I would say, because this perception of, oh, Northerners being really friendly, I've never sort of got onto that. I think we sound like we're friendly.
Yeah.
You know, I think people assume when I start talking, I think people think, oh, surely she's going to give us a cup of tea and ask how we are. It's like, no. Well, I'll tell you what, in the countryside, because my boyfriend's family are from rural Lincolnshire, my God, those people are nosy. You know, like everyone, you know, being from Manchester, as I say, I'd see the same people, you know, several times a week in my life, you know, in the supermarket, whatever. Never say hello to them, just think, oh, there's that bloke or whatever. Oh, my God, Lincolnshire. Oh, that's, that's Dave. He had a depressed wife and he left her for such and such thing. I'm like, how do you know the, like, everything? There's a guy crossing the road in front of the car a few weeks ago. My boyfriend went, oh, you see him? Well, he used to be a gardener. But I'm like, how do you know these people? And then I remember I was in a shop and I was waiting in the queue and a guy bought some scratch cards. But he just said to the woman, can you just beat these through, you know, to see if they were winners or whatever? Or just scratch your thing, see if they're winners. And I just mentioned it when I went back to the house. He went, what did he look like? That's Paul. That's Paul, that. I'm like, how do you know? And they went, well, you shouldn't be buying scratch cards, actually, because he's had a terrible gambling problem. And I'm just like, how do you know all these things about all these people? And I think, I don't know, in rural areas.
Because, you know, because 6 weeks ago this Wednesday, he was one away from winning £300.
Well, this, and I'm just like, how do you know? They're so nosy. Whereas I am just, you know, I don't want to, but also I think I don't want to talk to people either. Me, I'm like, look, I don't, the shop's closed, I'm done.
I think there's very little evidence that it's friendly. Or indeed, and now I think this is quite important when it comes to sort of the way we are as a country, or poorer. Because I think that, I mean, maybe not Manchester, but in the rest of what you'd call the North, I think it's the living costs, or the cost of actually having a house, somewhere to live, is so much cheaper than London that even if you earn less, you've actually got more money left than if you live in London, haven't you?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I just think now, like the jobs I had in Manchester, I mean, money was tight, but I couldn't have lived on that wage in London at all. Wouldn't have lasted a week in London. And now in London, I tell you, I'm just like, I might be coming to the end of my time in London because I just can't. Every month I'm paying the rent and I'm thinking, oh, enjoy that, me paying your mortgage on your second house while you live somewhere. I just can't, you know. And my landlord's a lovely guy, which not a lot of people get to say. And, you know, I don't be, obviously, you know, he's very fair and everything, but there is that thing of like, I'm paying so much money to live in a city that I'm not making the most of because I'm never here because I'm always away gigging, you know. And I just think, it's not worth it, is it? I went to Hampstead the other week.
Oh, yeah?
I did, because, you know, I like to, I visit, I love cemeteries and I like to visit a lot of different cemeteries. It's my hobby.
Oh, they've got a good one there.
Yeah, I love it. And I thought, oh, I'll go to Hampstead. I'll pop around this cemetery. But, I mean, different world there, isn't it? And, you know, when I was looking around, I was like, oh, I always wanted to live in London. But when I said I wanted to live in London, this is how I wanted to live in London. That's how I wanted it. I wanted that house looking at Hampstead Heath. But, you know, I can't have that. But also somebody had written
out
some
for
graffiti.
A packet of biscuits and bumping into Ricky Gervais.
There you go. That's the life that I thought, right? But somebody had written some graffiti outside some beautiful big houses that said, beat the cost of living, grow your own veg. And I thought, it's Hampstead. Why have you written that here? And I thought, that's enough for me. I'm getting back on the tube to Waltham.
Yeah, I think you made a wise choice.
Yeah.
Grow your own. Oh, and the pomposity of it.
I know.
Fuck off. With your fucking radishes. Fuck off.
Incredible.
Oh, because no one who was really poor would write that, would they? They might go, oh, I'll tell you what. And you know, one thing we have done that saved a little bit is, you know, there's a little tiny bit of, and we've got our own spring onions out the back, and but not,
well,
like,
people
oh, what's the matter with you going to shops?
People are poor, haven't got time. You know, I've been so skint in my life. It's like you constantly, you haven't got time for this. I haven't got time for activism. I've not got time to be writing graffiti, telling people how to live. I've not even, you know, if you're that skint, you've not even got time to share on social media what people should think people
Did
should
she
be doing.
Grow her own aerosol can. This little prophet.
Oh, unbelievable. Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah. Now, this brings us to the most important thing. So your podcast gets more and more. It's taking over the world.
Yeah, it needs to stop, really.
Mm.
It's getting a bit much.
It's huge, isn't it?
Yeah. It's 10-year anniversary this year.
Right.
And we're doing a 10-year anniversary tour, which started in Glasgow the other month. So, yeah, it just keeps going and going. People love true crime. It just keeps rolling on.
Who'd have thought that that would be like the subject that, you know, the two biggest subjects in Britain in the 2020s are how do we save the planet and, oh, let's hear about that bloke who murdered everybody.
Yeah, but you know what? I think this has gone on for centuries, if you think about it.
Mm.
Like, people used to go to public executions, didn't they? Which I'm convinced they still would now.
Mm.
People used to go to public executions, you know. People used to read the Illustrated Police News. People, you know, used to get the paper from the Ordinary in Newgate. It used to tell you you'd been executed and what the last words were and all this kind of stuff. People love it, you know. People love to hear about horrible things.
And Newgate was public, was it? When people were executed there, that was up to, would have been the last one, 1850s or something?
I think so, yeah. Maybe later than that.
Because I think in one or two Dickens books he mentions it, so, yeah, maybe later than that.
Oh, yeah. Dickens loved mentioning, he loved, Tyburn, you know, laugh about Dickens, like, oh, I thought it was disgusting, the baying crowds at this hanging. Yeah, you're there as well, mate.
Did he go to him?
Yeah, to be like, this is awful.
I think part of research. Disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, once, fine.
Yeah.
Twice.
That was him. I like to think that was him doing the same as when I go to East Grinstead. It's research. I'm not really a Scientologist.
I mean, I can't believe I'm on a podcast now just having a dig at Charles Dickens. I mean, what?
Giving it to
the
man.
What is going on?
Yeah. What the fuck is going on? We're sticking it to the man. Dickens. All that. Give it all that with your David Copperfield. Don't fucking see you bloody thinking about the poor when you were watching them getting bloody hung, mate. Hey?
Yeah, take that, Dickens.
Yeah. But are there new ones? Or are there the old favourites that keep coming back?
What do you mean, like,
well,
new serial killers?
Sort of crimes and, you know, or...
Well, I think the problem is that, I mean, we don't cover really recent cases because it feels a bit grubby, you know. I don't know, there's just something about... Levi Belfield, the serial killer, there's something that feels a bit too recent talking about him. Do you know what I mean? I don't know.
Right.
But serial killing in general, I think, is becoming harder to do. Good. I mean, obviously. But I think it's becoming, you know, it's sort of harder to be a serial killer because of DNA. DNA.
Yes.
Surveillance. Technology.
Do you think they get together and go, the game's changed?
Yeah. It's how it used to be. I remember in the 70s. Mate, the thing is, because I do so much read so much true crime and do the podcast and everything, I think I get fatigue from it. I think sometimes I'm like, I don't want to.
Oh, do you know what? A lot of people say you can find that with serial killing. It's fun to start with, but eventually, do you know what? It's just like any other job.
Got true crime fatigue. I just need a break. I mean, I say that, but, you know, what going to sleep last night, what am I reading? Some, you know, oh, the world's most evil killers. Why am I doing this? I can't read anything lighthearted. This is the problem. If someone recommends something to me and says, oh, it's really uplifting, I'm like, well, I won't be partaking in that. Thank you very much. Just not for me. I just love anything miserable.
It's got to have a murder in it.
Got to have a murder. Well, you know, a love story, but someone's died. It's got to be. There's no happy ending. I don't want a happy ending. No, thank you.
That's brilliant. It's got an ending you'll absolutely love. Not a soul left alive.
Perfect.
Hamlet. Perfect. Oh, that's brilliant. So, right. So, Rachel, tell us where you can listen to this podcast. And indeed, if you can scramble, indeed, kill for a ticket.
Very good. You can listen to it wherever you listen to your podcast, Spotify, Apple, iTunes, whatever. Wherever you listen, you'll find it. It's on YouTube as well. And you can get tickets from oldkill@nofiller.com if there's any left, which there might not be. But if you fancy it, come and have a look at the live show.
Thank you very much, Rachel.
Thanks for having me.
If you would like to hear more of that interview with Rachel, you can join us on Patreon, where there is an extended version available, and it is indeed thanks to our wonderful, virtuous, radiant, beatific people of exalted glory, worthy of infinite praise, supporters, that we can continue our quest to find out what the fuck is going on. Just follow the link on our Twitter page or search for Patreon, What's the F? And for as little as £2 a month, you will get early access to ad-free, that can't be right, it is, versions of the regular episodes. Or if you really want to know at an advanced level what is going on, for just £4 a month, you'll get a longer ad-free version of the episode with extended versions of the guest interviews with extra Elliot and bonus sketches. For example, this week, there's Lieutenant Colonel Sir Ambrose Chisler's Polly Unsaturate sharing a remarkable anecdote about her late majesty running the marathon. And you will get the chance to take part in an Ask Me Anything session in which you will be able to ask me anything, details of which will be coming up in the glorious announcements. All our Patreon supporters get the episodes on Friday nights, unlike everybody else who has to wait until Saturday mornings, crawling around the floor, laying in that special mud that, you know, people put on themselves to make themselves higher beings. So search Patreon, What the F, to join the WTF community.
What the fuck is going on?
This week, the Football Association announced that they were going to scrap the old tradition of replays in the FA Cup for matches that end in a draw. Now, we were hoping to speak to chair of the FA, Debbie Hewitt, but she's out with a hamstring injury and is still 2 weeks away from full fitness. So instead, here's deceased Yorkshire cricketer Fred Truman.
Well, I mean, they say that they're not going to have replays in the FA Cup. I mean, because of course, in my day, we had proper replays. I mean, you didn't just have one or two, you had dozens. I mean, even if the scores weren't level, you still went on and had replay. I mean, I remember one FA Cup tie between Accrington, Stanley and Barnsley Whippets. I mean, they had 78 replays. I mean, every game ended 0-0 because they couldn't afford goalposts, so no one could score. But, I mean, they didn't complain. They just got on with it. I mean, sometimes you had so many replays you had to play next round while you were still playing last one. I mean, you had 14 teams on pitch at the same time. I mean, including a water polo team. You got absolutely soaked. But, I mean, you didn't mind. No one complained. I mean, it was the same with wars. I remember we fought against French, King Charlemagne and what have you. I mean, went on for 400 years. I mean, it still ended up in a draw, but I mean, no one suggested going to penalties. You didn't back then. I mean, you just carried on playing. I mean, and I mean, in cricket, I mean, we didn't have replays at all. We just carried on. I mean, if it were a draw, you didn't complain. You just, I mean, one match went on for 23 years. It was still a draw after all players had died. I mean, they just got cremated and carried on, and I mean, got on with it. I mean, Billy Tidsby took 4 for 36 against Gloucester when he were a box of cinders. I mean, But these days, I mean, they wouldn't be bothered, would they? They just toss a coin and go straight to penalties so they can go and play their drill music or whatever it is they get up to. I give up.
What the fuck is going on?
And so, podcastees, we have come to that time of the week where we must all lay down apostate, if that is a word, and surrender before the announcements, as the ancient citizens of Rome would have to before the Senate, appealing to the mastery of the Roman legions to spare them should they be minded to in their announcements. And so must we here in this modern world of announcements, because we can't do anything without announcements. You can't go to the co-op without an announcement, which is why I have, this is my campaign to get our friend George Galloway to do the announcements in the co-op, which we have, he's been applying for it. Might not have time now, he's an MP. Here we go. Let me put it to you, customers of the co-op. Your invidious insistence upon parsimonious shopping activities renders you liable for acceptance of an extraordinary offer on pickled onions, in which your insatiable gluttony shall be rewarded with the unjust favoritism reminiscent of the voracious sharks of American colonialism, in particular, the unpleasant Mr. Henry Kissinger. No less than 3 jars shall be available for the price of 2. The first announcement this week is a big what the fuck thank you to Deborah Fleming, our latest noble, exalted, munificent, top-tier Patreon supporter. Thank you so much, Deborah, who now sits among the righteous like the angels that we see in stained glass windows in rural churches. That would be the case if this was a cult, and it's not far off. And a big announcement for our next Ask Me Anything session, which quite simply is a session in which you can ask me anything. I think last time we said within reason, but even that we've abandoned now. Even with that, in fact, you'll be put even further up the list if you just abandon reason and ask me anything so personal that it just it wouldn't be allowed on OnlyFans. So, if you are one of our higher tier Patreon supporters, £4 a month or above, you will be able to go online on that day, Tuesday the 14th of May, and ask me absolutely anything, which I will try and answer as best as I can, which will probably be a deeply disappointing. If you want to take part in that, sign up on Patreon and join me online Tuesday the 14th of May. Also, there's a new series of In Town where I go to towns and talk about the towns in front of people in the town. And I can announce that the first 4 of those towns, and again, there'd be bugles and drums and all manner of things if we had such facilities, then those towns will be Stoke, Margate, East Grinstead, which, apart from being a very pretty little Sussex town, is also the headquarters in Britain of the Church of Scientology. And do you know what? Once you look into them, they make a lot of sense. And somewhere else, Malvern, where they have lots of water. And then there will be 2 others, which we haven't announced yet, but those 4 places, they haven't been recorded yet. I know some people have been trying to get tickets and say it's difficult. You have to go on the BBC ticket unit website, and I think it's a bit tricky to get the tickets if you aren't in those towns. The East Grinstead one, of course, we want people from East Grinstead to come to it, because otherwise, if I'm talking about things in East Grinstead and everybody there is from Tibet, it won't work as well. So we now come to the questions. Oh, by the way, they'll be going out from June the 24th on Radio 4 and then on BBC Sounds. I know nobody listens to radio anymore or things like that, do they? So questions. Dixon Cox on Patreon asks, what the fuck is going on with my local Facebook community group? I live, and now this is a question that is said more and more in the troubling times of the modern world. I live in a fairly well-to-do area of Somerset with lots of privately educated people, says Dixon. Now, this isn't a combination that you think goes together. No, this is only stereotypes. But when you think of lots of privately educated people and you think, well, where would they live? And you might sort of say various places that are sort of around the home counties or something, or Kensington or something of that nature. You wouldn't think Somerset necessarily, but that, you know, Somerset's a big place. It's not all Shepton Mallet. They're not all going, well, tell you what, I don't know, everyone round here, we all went to Eton round here. We had to go to Eton because it's only by bloody, using all our farming methods that we have, because obviously we need twice as much food as anybody else, because as well as eating it, we bloody sling it at people and bloody chuck it at the homeless and all that sort of thing. I reared a whole pig once just so I could throw it at a tramp outside the Grail Chew Club. But they're not like that, are they? So, Dixon nonetheless says he lives in a fairly well-to-do area of Somerset with lots of privately educated people. Somebody says, now you'll have to concentrate on this because it's complicated. Somebody posting a photo of contrails on a sunny morning. Posting a photo of contrails on a sunny morning. So this is the sort of little jets of condensed water that come out the back of a plane. Is that it? Right. Seems to think it's the government trying to block out the sun. Now, that sounds like the person isn't well. If there's a picture of some pretty bits coming out of a plane. That's the government, that is, trying to block out the sun. Dixon goes on to say, I see no benefit to them doing this, as the government can barely organise the delivery of supplies. Right, Dixon, I think you could stop there. I think you can rule out that contrails are in any way the result of the government trying to block out the sun. I don't think you have to argue the case, just as when someone says the earth's flat, and that is less mental than this. I don't think you have to go, right, no, they can't be flat, right? Because, you know, when you think about it, look, you don't have to do that. We accept that they're not trying to block out the sun. I know this is the problem with conspiracy theorists, is it goes, oh, yeah, when people go, oh, right, you know that earthquake that took place, right, in Nepal? Well, I reckon that there wasn't really an earthquake. It's just the British government's organised it in order to get the inflation figures off out of the news. That's not true. The government hasn't done it. The conspiracy theories haven't worked. Your neighbours are mad. Their private education was a waste of money. And I suggest you move to a different bit of Somerset. There's some lots and lots of very nice bits of Somerset. Go to Glastonbury, where they're at least mad in a sweet little way. I did an in-town show once in Glastonbury. This is true, because all the shops there sell dream catchers and sort of tie-dye things and things that help you cast spells and various other homeopathic things and all this sort of pagan stuff. And then there's the only chain shop in the whole high street is a branch of William Hill's bookmakers. And I couldn't help thinking they're taking a chance with all the psychics in town. Catherine Davis, one of our Patreon supporters, asks, hi, Mark, do you have any comments on Rishi's determination to end the sick note culture in Britain? Apparently, vast numbers of people are feeling unwell, and this is Rishi Sunak's solution to it. Well, why not? We do have a sick note culture in this country, but that is because, I think it's two things. And one thing we should be proud of. One thing we shouldn't be. The thing we shouldn't be proud of is our working hours are longer than anywhere else in Western Europe. In France, their working hours are about 20 minutes a year. So they don't have a sick note culture because they have whole months that are known as sort of like easing back into work month and things like that. And then in January, they go, I do not see the point in turning up to work because we are getting ready for the summer. And this doesn't app over here, it's work, and it's seen as a great thing. Yeah, I worked 47 hours yesterday because I'm hard and stuff. In France, they would think that was mad, and they're right. And so here, there's a sort of, I haven't taken a day off since 1906. And that's mad. And so then people get really ill and they have
days off. But I think then there are people who go, right, I'm going to have a day off sick, and that's a brilliant thing. And there's nothing better than a day off sick. When you've rung up, you've convinced yourself you really are ill, you ring up going, oh, throaty things, and then as soon as you put the phone down, you think, fuck me, I feel better now, I'm going down the park. And that is one of the things that makes Britain great. That's the sort of thing that Rishi Sunak or Keir Starmer, when they want to make speeches in front of all these St. George's flags, they should say, what makes Britain great is our capacity to take days off sick when there is fuck all wrong with us. Leonie M. Smith on Patreon says, what a wonderful chat with Jan Ravens. Thank you, Leonie. For what it's worth, says Leonie, I always hope my name might be the L name in the storm name list and have been disappointed year after year. I don't even use the accent over the first E as the French do, Leonie. Leonie, I'm sorry. I only wish I had some influence in this matter and could persuade the government to use your name, Leonie, without an accent over the... I mean, the thing is, right, we're now giving our storms French names. When we have a Leonie, it should be Leonie, but not with one of them fucking... That's the fucking thing with the French. They come over here and they put fucking lines all over our letters and little squiggly bits under the C's and hats over some of the O's. The fuck's going on, bloody... We pulled their onions out of the fire in 1940, and then they're coming over here sticking O's over fucking hospital and taking the S out of the word. Fuck 'em. You go for it, Leonie. Right, you know the rules. You cannot even attempt to find out what the fuck is going on without the voice of the semi-youth. It's dangerous. It could cause a split in the space-time continuum. This is one of the things that's led to black holes, apparently. So that is why we have with us Mr. Elliot Steele. Hello. Oh, he has indeed gone down one of them black holes. Where are you?
Sorry, I clicked mute.
Right. I'm just going to explain to the good people listening.
I was looking up Hugh Edwards, sorry.
Right. You know when people go, thing is with new technology, what you need someone younger, you see. You just get your kids to do it. So what's happened there is that we've started to talk. I couldn't hear Elliot at all. And then when he come back on, he's gone, I was on mute. I put mute on by mistake.
Yeah, well, I wonder how the listeners will needed informing on that, seeing as they would have just heard that. Thank God we have you here to tell them about this.
What are you talking about?
I can hear Pete laugh as well because Pete hasn't muted himself. So there we go. There's me helping with the technology.
Now, my point being that the stereotype image of people of my age just being confounded by the slightest plug while young people go, oh, granddad, you stupid old duffer. I know you did very well at fighting at Passchendaele, but now you really need to learn how to plug things in.
What generation are you? Because your generation never fought at anything. You beat some sheep in the Falklands, and then...
Well, I didn't do that either.
And
I was...
You demand
I'm not
respect.
Asking for respect.
You
never... I'm asking for a certain amount of respect because it isn't always my generation. It's the useless ones technologically. That's what I'm saying.
But I wasn't useless there, technology. I just looked and went, oh, I'm on mute. So I muted myself. That was the thing muting me because I was trying to read about Hugh Edwards, who we're about to talk about, and neither of us really, really know what he's done. So we're probably going to stray into all sorts of legal trouble.
What did you find out that he'd done?
I can't really tell what he's done.
No, that's the thing. I can't tell what he's done.
I don't want this to be a clip that comes out in like 6 months' time when there's like a whole load of abuse about it. But it doesn't seem like it's that. It seems like it's a thing that I don't really care about.
Mm.
And because I don't care about it, I'm in the vast majority of people who aren't going to come out and go, why is this guy having to leave the BBC? Because he did something in his personal life that doesn't affect his ability to read the news.
No, it really doesn't affect his ability to read the news.
He sent a picture of his arse to someone.
Yeah. Yes, that is where we're at. I mean, a future society.
Why do I care about that?
In 100 years' time.
Why does that affect me?
What if that was you?
No, how does that affect anyone at all? Like, what has he done? If this is all, like, consensual, if it's all fine. Mm. And even if it's not consensual, it's just a picture of his ass. It isn't, like, probably shouldn't have done it, but, oh, well, block him. That would be my advice to the people we send him picture of his ass to, instead of going, we need to sack this man from his job. I'd go, right, before you do that, have you tried just blocking him and going, stop sending me pictures of your ass? Instead of making this a police matter when they're trying to solve, like, murders and fucking knife crime and stuff like that, and you couldn't have blocked them. That wasn't... unless it's going to take some baby reindeer, like, way, then yeah, maybe. But if you block someone and then they don't do it again, that would be my starting point. But... I don't know why the guy who commentated on when the Queen was died, the Queen's funeral, that was him, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Yeah.
But so why does it matter? Who cares?
I don't know. Well, we're in this sort of peculiar sort of period of opposites, when on the one hand, we're so much more liberal and accepting, and we refuse to be able to understand why it was that 50 years ago there were all sorts of people who were looked down upon for just being outside what is called, in inverted commas, normal, and now we're much more accepting. And then, as you say, if a bloke sends a picture of his ass, then he can no longer commentate the next time a monarch dies. And that seems to be a strange set of rules. I mean,
he should only be allowed to commentate when Prince Andrew dies, then.
Do you think they'll bring him back for that?
Well, because that seems fair. He should only be allowed to commentate on the other sex pest. That's it, because he would generally be sad about that, one of his own has gone. But... I don't get how does him send the picture of his
ass shorter as well. It wouldn't be like the, you know, with the Queen when he was like, and now on day 15 of this broadcast, as we look at the clouds that are fluffier than they were yesterday, as if they are themselves trying to get over the sadness as they pass over, not raining, as that would be a bit disrespectful, but this one would just be Hugh Edwards on Prince Andrew. And there he goes, and he's burnt, and he's gone. And now back to the studio.
I just don't understand how he sent a picture of his ass, and that stops him from going, well, and there was an explosion in Nicosia today. Like, what does that, what the fuck does that, why do I care? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think there are some things where you would go, no, that you can't carry on. You know, I think it was right that Rolf Harris, after he was caught, of all sorts of misdemeanors involving young people, that he should no longer be allowed to sing the Court of Caractacus or present a programme about sick rabbits.
I don't know how you've made the jump of conclusion that I've gone, Hugh Edwards seems like he's being a human being.
To me
then going, like, I think paedophiles should be allowed to be the head of schools. Like, well, I don't know why.
Hang on. Nor did I say that paedophiles should be allowed to be the head of schools.
Do you remember Jamie Oliver did that thing years ago where he designed his perfect school and he got Rolf Harris to be part of it?
Yeah, but he didn't know what Rolf Harris had been up to, did
he? I'm not saying he knew what Rolf Harris was up to, but, like,
there you go, paedophile running the school, partner.
But he got, all right, let's, but maybe that's part of the Jamie Oliver's way to make kids fitter again, was that he sort of created, like, this natural selection where only the fitter kids were able to escape Rolf Harris. So he was, all right, you little porkers, well, that's going to show you, isn't it, to put down the turkey Twizzlers and do some morning cardio. That was... That's what he did.
And that is how Britain got 9 Olympic golds in Paris in 2024.
It's an unusual method. But the Chinese and the Russians are starting to adopt it.
Yeah. They've got their own Rolf Harris. They've been cloning them. They've got loads of them in little basements in St. Petersburg. Yes, I think we have many now.
You release a known paedophile into a school and you get a great track and field Olympic team. It's a proven method.
The Chinese have got hundreds of them.
Yeah. That's why they're good at ping pong. They give them the paddle to whack them away. Every country has its own little tweak on the methods. But I don't know what
Hugh would have been commentating on that, wouldn't he, if he'd if we were in more better lighting times.
Should we at some point maybe clear up what he did? Because I don't want this to go out and then people go, no, you know he's charged with like the murder of 17 people and we're here just going, well, I don't think he did anything wrong.
I don't think he did murder 17 people. I think he sent a picture of his arse when he was at a time when he was particularly sort of, you know, in a little bit of turmoil himself, I would have imagined.
How old's the person he sent it to?
20, I think.
Were they?
Yeah.
Why the fuck's this a news story then?
Maybe he was a bit younger. It wasn't like 7. I mean, then I could see an issue.
But weirdly, all right, I'll say this. If they were like 14, that's wrong. But for some reason, 7 somehow comes like funny again. Like, somehow it goes from like 14, that's creepy. 7, that's quite funny. I don't know what he.
It wasn't 7, no. He was, and then it's his parents who sort of made a big fuss. And
when they're doing a Michael Jackson thing,
the boy himself said, "I wasn't really that bothered."
Why do people? Right, I'm getting sick of parents and their entitlement, because there's a comedian, Arj Barker, who's just someone brought a baby into his show. And the woman started breastfeeding. He was like, this is really distracting and weird. Would you mind leaving? kicked up a fuss because she thinks it's her right that she should be able to bring her child into wherever she likes. And, you know, if it wants to cry and scream and affect someone's show, then that's everyone else's issue and not hers, because she couldn't find a babysitter to look after. And there's this thing with parenting now where people refuse to accept any responsibility that if they have a kid, it's going to limit the amount of things that they can do. The same way that if I bought a giraffe and started turning up to places and going, this isn't tall enough for me to bring a giraffe into. And then people went, well, yeah, we didn't really take that into consideration when doing that. I can't believe I have to explain to you that you can't bring a giraffe in it. I go, well, you're a giraffist and this is disgusting. And I'm going to be writing a Guardian article about this because I fuck all else going on in my life and I fancy being famous for a week.
Well, I like to think that our conversation has entertained but also informed.
Of course, as it always does.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Elliot Steele. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you've liked it, rate it, and if you can be bothered, write a review. If you can't be bothered, then give up your job, leave your family, go and join a cult and spend all day writing the review in a hitherto undiscovered language. If there is anything at all that you think I should be finding out what the funk is going on with it, please send me a message on Twitter at WTFisGoingOnPod, and we will look at every message that you send. If you would like to become a WTF supporter for as little as £2 a month and get early access to ad-free, and extended versions, please visit our Patreon page. What the Fuck Is Going On was hosted by me, Mark Steele, with my guests Rachel Fairburn and Elliot Steele. Voices by Sarah Alexander. It was written by Mark Steele and Pete Sinclair. Music was by Willie Dowling. It was produced by Mike Benwell at Carousel Studios. What the Fuck Is Going On was brought to you by WTF Productions.